Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable for this Wednesday, the 25th of January. Very nice to have you with us on this day, and we welcome you to the program. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get right in. We have a lot to talk about, as we always do, but it's especially busy today. Let me introduce the group to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Joe. We do have a lot to talk about, and one of the things you have to talk about is how incredibly important filling up that lockbox is. We have about $100,000 to go. We have just about up to $400,000.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Don't you think we're at $398 right now? $398 and $14. Don't you think by 9:30 we could be at $400,000?
Without question, I think by 9:30 we could be at $450,000.
Well, there you go.
I think.
And therefore, we make it so.
Everybody, you know how important this is. This really is incredibly important. We know what's at stake here. Everybody, just get to the phone. Get to 1-800-323-9262, extension 0. And then also you could go to WAMC.org, and that's really the best way to do it. So if you're thinking about doing it, now's the time. Sorry I gave the spiel.
No, that's all right. It was my fault because normally I start from the left and go to the right, but that's fine.
Well, you can still start from the left and go to the right here in a different way.
Very, very good point. By the way, if you pledge $100, you can get a First Amendment mug. If you pledge $100, you can get a First Amendment T-shirt. It has the whole First Amendment on there. And if you pledge $150, you can get both of them. And hurry. While they last. And I don't mean the T-shirts. I mean actually the First Amendment.
That's very funny. Very good. Well said. Because there are indications that there may be a problem.
Rosemary Romeo is here. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. It's a great pleasure to see you. I missed you yesterday, and it's nice to have you.
We missed you. I support the First Amendment and WAMC.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And speaking of that, so does Rich Honan, I'm sure. He is our good friend. He's a corporate attorney and is with us most Wednesdays, and it's a delight that this is a Wednesday, and he is with us today. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. Sorry to hear about your cold.
Well, I'm fine. I'm fine.
You're soldiering through, so I'm impressed.
I have what everyone else in the world has. You walk through this building and everybody is...
Has or head.
That's right, in various stages. So, all right, well, let's go to the one thing that happened late last night. I think it was even after I sent stuff out, which was that Donald Trump plans the Mexican wall and sets his sights on immigration. Today, he will sign an executive order to direct funds to the building of a border wall, a signature issue of his campaign. He is also considering resuming a once secret detention program, keeping the Guantanamo Bay prison open and designating the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist group.
Making America great again. The Mexican officials are coming into Washington tomorrow. And I think that will be an interesting discussion. Mexico has been a huge partner to the United States, something that we haven't heard about a lot in the campaign. They are a major market. They're the biggest market for American goods. They are a partner with the United States in fighting drugs and security issues at the border. And all of that will stop with a wall. Their position is going to be, okay, build the wall if you must. No, we're not going to pay for it. And all the other stuff goes away. So you're going to substitute what we do now with the wall. Is that what you really want? Interesting argument.
Rich.
Yeah, I don't know that it'll go that way. I think that they could look at it and say, here's, you know, the cost estimates vary wildly, right? From 10, I've heard as low as $10 billion, which sounds very low to me. To a lot more than that, but I think they might look at it if it is truly a fait accompli, then they might look at it as kind of an enormous economic development project where billions and billions of dollars are funneled in and
funneled into what?
Funneled to Mexico.
You think we're going to hire Mexican workers to build this wall?
I would expect so if it's their money.
I don't think it's going to be their money. There's no evidence that they're paying.
Well, I think we're going to lend it to them. I would have guessed that was always the plan. And
are you a fan of the wall?
I'm a fan of border security. I think the wall's part of it.
All right.
I mean, there's a wall whether you call it a wall or security or a border between every other country in the world. I don't know why there wouldn't be one here.
Even people who live on the border on the American side have been saying, yeah, I have a big old fence the government put up in my backyard. It doesn't stop anything. If there's a 20-foot fence, they'll get a 21-foot ladder. You need people to monitor, to walk along the walls. And, of course, there's now a federal freeze in the Immigration Department. ICE is one of the departments that's got the hugest need for new hires. And one more thing before Alan speaks, because it isn't just the wall going up. It's NAFTA coming down, which is a double whammy to Mexico, I think.
I just want to, just for Immigration Customs Enforcement.
Right.
ICE.
Not ISIS.
Not ISIS. That's
no.
What,
no.
It just
Did I say ICE?
No,
said
you said ICE,
ICE okay.
But it just right. sounded, yeah. yeah. So
Sorry.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Alan.
Well, I think what's been said is correct. We do have to have security at our borders. I think that the other part of this is, what if Donald Trump becomes responsible for really screwing up the Mexican economy more than it's screwed up already? In other words, what if now, in terms of his obvious difficulties with Mexico and his obvious pulling them in one way or another into this economic morass, whether he's going to have to suffer from that when it's all over? In other words, isn't that the way that it should be? You hold the president responsible for what he does?
The peso has plummeted since he came into office, so there's certainly, but of course he doesn't care about that. It's America's needs first.
And to say nothing of telling Ford they can't go there, telling
Correct.
Other people they can't go there.
Mexico's been hurt severely already.
And I'm sorry, English teachers, it's just for emphasis, they ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, globalism, people have been touting globalism for, 20 years now. And you have to remember, globalism is still at bottom a zero-sum game. Right. If somebody gets jobs, somebody else loses jobs. If somebody's a buyer, somebody else is a seller. And I don't know that on the trade side that there's a specific targeting of Mexico. But if that's where he believes American jobs are heading, and he wants to bring those jobs, keep those jobs in America, yeah.
We know it. We know it yeah. for the Ford example, right?
But if those jobs were going anywhere, if those jobs were going to Canada, if they were going to India, I think he would have the same approach.
Here's the thing. I agree with you. Globalism has glaring faults. Boy, we've certainly been made aware of them in the past year, from Brexit to the election here. Absolutely. But the solution that Trump is putting into place, and the Brits too, is we go back to the old system, which are the international rules, which is a free-for-all. And that we know doesn't work. We lived through that. That's why we had the trade agreements. That's why we moved to globalization. It makes no sense to go back to a failed system.
Well, yeah. let's pause it for a moment. That Trump's idea is to keep the jobs in America, not to let them out anywhere else. Let's just say that it helps America. It doesn't help the world, as you're just indicating, Rosemary. Is it right? So I think Obama cared about the world. He cared about the world in terms of climate change. You think he cared about the world? If you have a Trump who says, oh, no, I don't care about the rest of it, I just care about here, that really sets up a paradigm that is fascinating to me about a guy who cared about the world and a guy who cares only about the country and whether or not that's going to work.
I think you can make a really strong argument that caring about the world was good for America. TPP, which we're now not part of, set us up to be a real player against China. That's gone now. Trump, if he's the genius negotiator he would have us believe, maybe can pull out. But there's no guarantee of that. And China is delighted by what has happened. And now Mexico is on the free market because if he drops NAFTA. And so will Canada. And both Canada is a replacement market for the United States. We are not the exclusive, only needed place that we used to be in the old days when these old rules applied. It's going to be much harder now.
Well, I'd certainly take issue with the fact that the last 8 years have been where America has somehow prospered, globally. But I do agree with Rosemary that if conservatives believe that we overcorrected in favor of the world over the last 8 years, and now liberals are afraid that we're going to overcorrect in favor of America, I agree that that's a bad thing. I mean, we'll just swing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
With, the vicissitudes of whatever you know, whatever party's in charge. I agree with Rosemary that I think that there does need to be a correction. I think you have to be very careful about overcorrection. You know, as we, I think that might just be what globalism is always going to be. I don't think there'll ever be stasis in globalism. I think it'll just be going back and forth.
The best stuff I read about this was by economists, not politicians. And they go, wow, we really messed this up. You know, we thought globalism because it, on paper it makes such sense. You know, you make stuff where it's the cheapest to make it and you sell it, then the cheapest to everybody and we all benefit. And then forgot about, well, those people who are making it in the more expensive places, what about them? That's the dislocation that we're talking about. But if the world is richer overall, if the world is prospering, you change that. And Hillary did it terribly. She said, oh, we're going to retrain you coal miners, and you know, you can do other jobs. But the truth is, they can do. There are jobs in solar now that didn't exist before the, the Obama administration, Rich. He's the one who just put this enormous amount of money in. And you're seeing a budding market in sustainable energy that didn't exist before. Why can't coal miners do that? Why? Yes, it takes effort, which we have not done before. But globalism doesn't have to be tossed out.
I'm not suggesting that it is. I think, but somewhere between the last 8 years of America Last and the next few years of America First, there's a happier medium. I would also point out the funniest thing about sustainable jobs, jobs in sustainable industries like sustainable energy, are not in fact sustainable. Most of those jobs are government funded jobs that have not yet really taken hold to where you have a truly sustainable market, a lot of which you arguably has to do with globalism, has to do with things like China flooding the world with cheap with cheap solar panels and things like that.
I'm not sure what is a sustainable job anymore. Isn't the auto industry that took a big dose of government money? It isn't working for the government. That's been cut. What's a sustainable job these days?
I mean, I'd argue, obviously, you know, coming from where I come from, that the most, first of all, I don't know that anything is sustainable. I agree with
Correct.
You. I think that the more sustainable jobs are the ones that are more exclusively within the private sector, that don't depend as much upon at least direct government infusions. Now, the government's such a large part of our economy now that I'm sure you can trace everybody's job somewhat to some portion of government money. But I think direct government jobs are not terribly sustainable. Even government funded initiatives aren't terribly sustainable. I still go back to the private sector.
You had about five letters, Joe and group, about the zero sum game. A lot of people checking in on that. George, for example, says economics is not a zero sum game. Wealth and jobs can be created. Globalism is not zero sum, and that's from George. And there.
Did you get the earth?
Yeah, and then here are some others.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know in this group, Joe, whether.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, right. So, but we have a lot of them basically dealing with this concept of zero sum. And I don't know whether or not the economists want to say more about it. Okay.
I think it's really dangerous to try and base political and social theory on economic theory. All right. I mean, there's a lot of parts of economic theory that, you know, has not worked out, you know, real well. And you know, I'm still arguing with people about whether there's still a Phillips curve and things like that. I think it's dangerous to make policy based solely on that.
Okay, Rich. Just as I'm not sure what job you think is sustainable in the private sector, because I can't think of any, I don't understand what you mean about a government policy that's not based on economics. Name we want. You got communism, socialism, you've got capitalism like our own, free market. Tell me a political system that's purely political and doesn't involve economics.
I'd argue that those are more political theories than economic theories, but I agree with you. If you're saying generally, look, you know, capitalism versus socialism, if you want to call that economic system, I think that's somewhat larger than that. But I'm talking about basing things on economic theory, you know, leveraging off your point where you said, you know, a couple of years ago we thought this would be a great idea. We'd open up all these markets,
right?
And people, there's people who need jobs, and then there's people who need goods, and we just match those people up, and everything works. And I think there were some holes in that economic theory.
Totally, and I would also agree with you that the TPP was not the perfect, far from the perfect solution. Many Democrats didn't like it. It was negotiated in secret, gave lots of power to companies rather than to people and to governments. But that doesn't mean we go back to that trade war, which I think is what we're headed for.
Yeah, and I agree the trade war would be bad. I think the thing about TPP, I think it actually it points out one of the big differences, one of the big kind of big cultural differences mm-hmm. between the liberals and the conservatives. And one of them is it seems the TPP wanted to get kind of a global, and I mean, that always seems to be, you know, the global response. We want everybody signed on, and we want to solve as many issues as we can. And whereas the more conservative right. theory is, you know, what, you know, one-on-one. Okay, look, you know, in the context of the TPP, you know, let's get a deal between us and Singapore. Let's get a deal between us and whoever, and then they could get deals among themselves. And that is one of the big differences between liberals and conservatives, this idea where liberals like the idea of kind of a full solution, right? You know, healthcare. We did a full solution to healthcare. And conservatives are often looking for a less dramatic
response.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Maybe because
I think that's true.
That could be a big part of it.
Yeah.
But culturally, see, it's just a different approach. I think Trump, for example, would rather have 12 different deals than one deal with 12 people.
Or he would rather have a deal that he feels was a better deal.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, TPP and the rest of them, Iran and the rest, he just feels we made a bad deal. I don't happen to agree with him, but he thinks because I'm much more interested in what affects the whole world.
I just don't see any. This is like when you play. Did you ever play War as a kid?
Sure.
And the sides all line up and everything's going, and then suddenly one player pulls out and does something, you know, betraying his partners. That's what's happening right now. So you've got the EU breaking apart. That trade deal is gone. And NAFTA, that's going. TPP, that's gone. So you've got all these free agents now, and the United States is not as strong as it once was. I'm sorry. China is going to be hell to deal with.
All right.
So is Mexico.
We're going to hold you all there. We have to take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation. A lot of other issues to talk about as well. We have a ton of letters. We want to get to those. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Yo. Armeo, and Rich Honan on the group. Hey, we're still waiting to get to the $400,000 point. We may have made it. I just don't know yet. But help in the lockbox, WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262 are the ways. I realized about halfway through our when we were talking that I don't know that we actually gave the information out. I think most people know it. But just
no,
so
I think
you know,
I did. But 1-800-323-9262. I don't think there is a child alive in our listening area who doesn't know that number
by heart.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, WAMC.org, which is a great place to go.
All right, we got a lot of letters, so let's get going on those, and then we want to move on to some other things that we have to talk about because there's big stuff to talk about.
And keep them short. Rich, if you believe in the wall, then you pay for it. The Republicans do not seem to have a plan nor enough money to pay for it. And I, for one, refuse to spend my tax dollars on such nonsense. So when you refuse, exactly how is it?
Has that work?
Right.
Yeah.
I pay for everything else in this country. I'll pay for that, too.
Well.
I don't have a choice if it's tax money, right? I pay for everybody else.
Don't pay taxes.
Add everybody to the list. No, I'm fine.
Seth says, no stopping technology and globalism. Trump is leaving a vacuum for China. Is it possible for Mexico to sign trade and other deals with Russia and China, et cetera? Would that make our southern border more vulnerable ultimately? Thank you for all for doing this every morning.
China has been in Latin America on a number of trips, Premier Xi, and signed something like 57 trade deals. Those are deals signed with China, not with the United States.
You know.
Yes. Trade war coming.
Right. No question. Daisy, I keep thinking of all these flippant things to say, and I keep saying, no, I won't do that, because then we'll get letters, you know, saying flippant things. So, here's one. As soon as they were done doing their last trade deal China with Latin America,
mm-hmm.
everybody felt hungry again.
Oh.
So they had to do another one.
Oh.
Okay, so here we go.
Yeah, you deserve letters on that.
Okay, Daisy says, this is all pageantry and symbolism, so he can tweet to his baying supporters. How do you build a wall through mountains and rivers? You can't, even if the supporters in Texas say so. This is Breitbart, slight at hand, it says. Well, now that's interesting. There is the Great Wall of China, right? Up and down the hills, the mountains, the rest of it.
Well, there's also the wall in, is it Jerusalem? There's a security wall in Israel.
It looks like a prison.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, but the Breitbart, suggestion is not a bad one, which is even if you're not going to build it, you say you're building it, and that gives you kept your promise. Jason says, yesterday your panelists did not dispute the myth that producing goods here made them more expensive. Oh yeah, we did. We acknowledged that. That's right. Yeah. We didn't dispute it. People never challenge this. How much more does a pair of sneakers actually cost to produce here? 15 cents, a dollar? This is never brought up. Well, you brought it up, Jason, and we're glad you did. Without the actual cost difference.
Wait, is that a myth?
That's not a myth. It does cost more.
I thought does actually cost more to
We pay our
here.
Workers a living wage, yeah. unlike many other countries.
We don't pay our people 15
more.
Cents a week.
Right. And if you put some, if it costs 20 bucks, it used to be 13. But just the guy who puts the window in the car, $20 just to put the window in the car. Forget about the rest of it. Obviously, somebody's got to pay for that, right?
Right.
Fair enough. Okay. And then it says, Kevin, the idea that the majority of illegal immigration comes across the wall is alternative fact. Most illegal immigration is from expired visas of those who travel here normally. The wall is simply a symbolic gesture, yes, so we just said that, directed towards Trump's base, who is afraid of the other and blames them for taking their jobs. It is a racist, alt-right symbol and nothing more.
Do you think that's true, Rich and Alan, that it's just a symbol? I mean, he appears to be actually building a wall. You called it a great economic development project.
I think what this writer is saying— I think he's saying that even if the wall's just built, he's saying it's just a symbol. It's not truly a deterrent, it's not just putting
up the wall whether it works or not.
I think that's what his argument is.
Or he's even worse than that. He's saying he's putting up the wall whether he does or not. Also symbolic. Okay, and that's Kevin from Cherry Valley.
Was border fence legislation signed off during Bill Clinton's administration? They called it a fence. They didn't call it a wall. But
and there are indeed fences along sections of the border.
By the way, the breaking news is that the Dow hit 20,000 for the first time ever.
Really?
It's up 1,667 points since President Trump's victory in November. Just for the for that information. Okay.
But
go ahead, Alan.
Is that surprising?
But you can't spend it.
Well, I mean, we were flirting pretty close, right?
Yeah, is that a big surprise that the stock market has done well? I went back to, do you remember when back in April, more than a year ago, the Boston Globe came out with a mock front page? And they said this is what it would look like if Trump won, and it was his first day. And it's incredibly accurate, with the one exception is they forecast a market crash. And I didn't believe it then. I still don't understand why. They thought all the uncertainty, but deportations begin, was the headline across the top. It's pretty interesting.
In the first hours of the election, right, during election night, wasn't the Dow down like 800 points, though?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
it was.
The markets tanked.
Because
then they rebounded quickly in the morning.
Yeah. And they did it with Brexit, too, even though long-term that's going to be an economic disaster.
I told you to buy on the Brexit dip.
Buy England?
Yeah. Buy England.
Buy Brexit. buy on the dip.
Buy Brit.
Sale.
All right.
Okay, here we go. John says, based on Rich's dislike of social and economic theory, does he support eliminating the tax deduction for home mortgage interest?
I don't. I don't know why they're... and by the way, I have no problem using... I think that it's a fact of life that we use tax policy to make... We use taxes to make social policy.
Yes, we do.
And we do it to incent behavior that we want to incent. And I think, you know, home buying is behavior we want to incent. I have no idea why they want to eliminate that.
Then why would you sign legislation to make it harder for a first-time homeowner? I don't get that one. It isn't an actual cut, but it stops a decrease that was going to go in insurance rates for first-time homeowners. Why would that's in contradiction to tax code?
You would, because somebody makes out like a bandit as a result of having that happen.
Yeah, I never understood. That's the other thing. I never, you know, when the whole mortgage, you know, when those of us, when you buy a house, you have private mortgage insurance, and it's you know, this PMI, and it's annoying because it adds on to your payment and everything. And then when the market melted down, I kept saying, well, okay, so where's the private mortgage insurance that we all had to pay for? It, you know, it seemed to do nothing to mitigate that.
Good point.
Okay, Peter says, re-sustainable jobs. Get elected to Congress and you're set for life. That's true.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Things that really tick me off, it's that they get their salaries for the rest of their lives. Not only the president.
Yeah, Speaker of the House.
No.
I wasn't arguing. Those jobs are sustainable for the people who have them. I'm just saying they're not necessarily sustainable for us to support as an economy.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Peter, for that.
Good point.
Good. Yes, well said. It really is annoying. Okay, and then Michael says, retraining coal miners to install solar means relocation and breaking up rural communities in, for example, West Virginia. While liberals tend to be very mobile and willing to move across the country for jobs, rural conservatives don't. If they did, they would have left West Virginia already. True?
West Virginia doesn't use solar, can't use solar?
And we don't know that, by the way, but yeah. Jennifer says, original sin was depopulating rural areas, wiping out small family farms. And Amy says, please point out to Rich that the USA had a stronger recovery than most in the world over the past 8 years.
Yeah, Rich.
Sure.
I also believe economics...
On the stock market side. I would argue they didn't necessarily on the employment side, but go ahead.
I also believe economics is politics. That's why most of the European universities have the Department of Political Economy. You know that? Yeah, they don't have political science departments necessarily. They have political economy. I'll keep it brief. When I think of government-subsidized jobs, my first thoughts are CDTA, CSX, and Amtrak, three very heavily government-funded entities. Would these jobs fall into the non-sustainable category? Can anybody think of a way that they would? Yeah. Suppose it all gets robotized. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we're talking off-air. I think we have different definitions of sustainable. When I say sustainable, I don't mean that guarantees you a job for life. And I think that's kind of what Rosemary was talking about, that you know you're going to have a job. I was talking about jobs that are sustainable on their own without significant governmental input. I will say, when you come to things like transportation and communication, like CXX and CDTA, they are fulfilling. There is a public interest there that otherwise, you know, the government might be fulfilling on its own. So I kind of exempt those a little bit from my criticism of government-funded jobs, because it's something that we need to do.
And I say this only respectfully, but then you become the decider. Rich is the decider as to what is, you know, governmentally appropriate and what is not appropriate. For example, is Medicare appropriate?
Right, exactly. Right.
So, okay. So Joe says, we did that. Joe already said that. We said thank you. All right.
And actually, then, Joe wants to say that he wants to get on to our
next
topic.
I just want to go to a break.
Oh, okay.
We'll hold on for a break.
Sure.
And actually, I'm going to give you, I'll trade you.
No.
Oh, you got your own thing. Okay, good. Excellent. We're all collating now.
We have one or two letters today,
don't we? Excellent. Yes, we do. We may even get to a few. We'll be back right after this break. Welcome back to the roundtable. We got a ton of letters, and we want to get to them. One of them, I just want to... touch on real quick. It's from Bob in Grafton. Said NPR's Morning Edition had a segment today on why they haven't been using the word lie with regard to some of Donald Trump's statements and Twitters that are contrary to reality. Their reason was that a lie implies intent and they can't prove intent. We all know a lie when we hear one. We've known it since our playground days. NPR is getting caught up in their pedantic shorts on this one. Journalists have an obligation to call a lie a lie. The New York Times did it in their lead story yesterday, and NPR and WAMC must do the same. Anything short of this is a cop-out and a disservice to listeners and our country. I have to say that when I heard the story this morning, I was really quite shocked in the fact that they have decided to never use that word, at least not yet. They would not call it a lie. They would not call him a liar, saying that they were unable to substantiate the intent.
Well, look, there are two choices here. One is he didn't have the intent, or he did have the intent. If he did have the intent, then he really is a liar, right? If he didn't have the intent and he just keeps on lying, then he's a little bit crazy because, you know, basically he's not living in a world of reality. He's just telling lies, which he believes.
As the media ethicist here, let me switch the conversation to NPR's behavior. Reader Allison points this out as well. There was a direct conflict of interest. That story never mentioned that the man who they've decided to protect by not calling a liar is threatening NPR funding.
Absolutely.
That's a direct conflict of interest.
They did not mention that. And
do you believe that? Do you guys really believe that NPR and the I'm being facetious here, but do you really believe that?
I love it, actually. Go ahead.
Do you really believe that NPR is protecting their own fanny by altering their news decisions?
Yeah, I think they're being real careful. Definitely. That's the appearance, anyway.
I don't think they want to tick them off anymore and give them and add right. fuel to the fire, at least in this particular case. So the thing I don't understand
Too late.
Is if you come out and you say whether it's crowd size in the mall, whether it is the investigation. We'll talk about this in a few moments about the investigation having to do with. President Trump called for a major investigation into voter fraud this morning and millions of voters not being able to vote, that he actually would have won the popular vote. 50 state secretaries of state say that that is not the case. There is absolutely no proof to that claim at all. He says he has facts that he has not shared with anyone else other than himself. So what is the intent there? Isn't the intent to deceive people that he is a winner rather than
we don't
a loser?
Know. As I just said, we don't know. If in fact it's not his intent and he really believes it, cuckoo. So there would be that.
The intent is to be a winner, though, right? I
think the intent is to soften us all up, to say, wow, this, you know, voter fraud's a problem. So when there are laws proposed on voter suppression, we've seen one or two of those in the past couple of years, there will be more people will be more receptive to putting them on the ballot.
And then, by the way, I just want to say one more thing, and then I got a letter in the middle of the night from somebody who said they're going to go to John Faso's office well, if, you know, there's all that voter fraud and you're not calling him out on it.
You shouldn't really be in this office, Zephyr won.
Well, you know, that's trickled down. It's a good point, right?
I laughed at that letter.
It's a good letter. But to Alan's point, if you extrapolate Alan, and when I say Alan's point, I mean a point that he has made on this program several times, which I think when you look at this is interesting to say, okay, but if you start delegitimizing elections,
that's the
then
point.
aren't you setting up to the point of, well, then why do we have them?
Yes, you are. And what will happen in 4 years?
Someone's not talking.
I don't let the Trump administration do to you what the Obama administration did to us on the right. Don't keep talking about the shiny object. He's going to say 20 stupid things a day, 20 stupid lies a day. And if you jump all over him, you'll spend that much less time talking about important things like the Keystone Pipeline and like trade war. If you guys are going to do this every time he says something that makes zero sense, you're going to spend all your time doing that and none of your time focusing on real issues.
So basically, don't call him out.
It's up to you.
First of all, I love the fact that you are saying that he says dumb things. Okay, so that's cool. But anyway, but the second part to that is just the question here put before us when it comes to NPR and news organizations about a lie. Is it a lie? Is it a mistruth? Does it matter what you call it?
Oh, I think it matters what you call it. Don't you, Rosemary?
Well, sure.
I mean,
it does.
I, first of all, a couple of things, and I defer to the journalism experts here. First, I think if you come out,
you got caught in your throat, didn't that?
Yeah, no. hey, my whole family's journalists. Okay, so I have a huge amount of respect for them. It's just that if I'm NPR, I'm thinking, well, gee whiz, if we call him a liar in the first week, what are we going to call him, you know, a year from now? You know,
right.
We have to kind of hold back on some of that or else it's going to lose some of its potency. Second, I just think from just an English usage standpoint, you can say somebody's lying without calling them a liar. I think there's just better ways, and I think many more cutting ways of saying it. But I agree with Rosemary. If they're afraid to call them a liar because they're afraid of their funding, that's a really bad
it's
thing.
It's a conflict. Liar was always a red-letter word when I went to journalism school many years ago. You never said it. Just like you didn't call someone who was arrested 18 times, you know, for drunk driving. You didn't call them a drunk. You said they were arrested 18 right. times for drunk driving. You're right. There are other ways to say it. And we've been exploring the limits of those ways under the 5 days, has it been, of the
so the other
administration.
Way, the other way of asking the question, then, is the Times wrong in using the word liar?
I don't think so. I think they've made the decision that these are this is an extraordinary administration, and we have to figure out some way to cover it that is different than the norm. However, they do risk, just what Rich said, liar is losing its effect anymore. Yeah, it's the left calling the president a liar again.
It's true. I will say, you know, it's very much akin to the right being called racist.
Right.
I mean, the first time I was ever called a racist, you know, here, I felt like physically sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
And now I've been called a racist 7 million times.
You're not a racist.
Well,
you
whatever,
just simply decided
saying,
that racism didn't matter in the manual elected
word
to be president.
It's a word that the first time somebody applied it to me, seriously, I had like a physical reaction. And now it happens so much that it loses its effect, which is a terrible thing right there. But I think you could do the same with liar.
I feel we lost your original point, which was a very, very good one, and I want to get back to it.
Yeah,
and
don't play his game, man.
Yeah.
You're gonna be chasing all he says so many things that have no basis, and if you guys are gonna run around chasing all of them, we kinda need, you know, and look, I'm a supporter, right? But we kinda need strong, focused opposition to keep things on track. And if you're going to run around every time he says something dumb, you'll spend your whole day doing that.
Rich, I don't get it. I mean, I think we have to call him out. I think we have
okay.
I think we have to hold him responsible, because everything he says is going to have great effect in terms of what happens in this country.
This doesn't.
What
was the original thing he said? More people was this
a 3 million
thing?
Illegal immigrants?
Yeah,
Rich.
I would have got. How about over the weekend when he said more people were at my inauguration than at Obama's?
And
clearly
untrue. I'm going to tell you why.
Because he
undermines American democracy, which is fragile enough. And when you start saying I really won those votes that I didn't win, you are basically calling into question. Pardon me. The legitimate transference of power. And that's what it's
I think if he did that with any, if he provided any basis, any demonstrable proof, then you could have the conversation. But if he's just going to say
You know what? But the articles that came out over that weekend, I found to be really troubling, because basically he went into a tantrum. He was checking his phone on the Friday, saw the news that was coming out that his crowd wasn't as big as Obama's crowd, and started to lose it.
Okay. That's interesting. I have another point, which is I do think the media is trying to figure out when to go after and when to drop the shiny object. So, for example, I did not want to talk about that ridiculous thing that we take away the citizenship of people who burn flags. I have not mentioned the claim that I'm going to send in the feds if Chicago can't figure it out, because those are shiny objects.
Right.
This is different, though. He is spreading the idea, and it's been consistent. The election is rigged. There's voter fraud, and you pair that with Republicans passing in all the legislatures of this country in the South and the West, voter suppression laws, ID laws. That's connected. That's spreading the idea, the false idea, that voter fraud is widespread. It's not.
It's also the cherry picking of saying this is an issue. However, we're only going to take a cursory glance at the Russian issue and the hacking.
Right.
And its effect. Yeah.
So to answer Rich, here's a letter from Richard, a different Richard panel. I think Trump's ridiculous claim of voter fraud is going to be used by Republicans to push for more voter ID laws and reduce voter rights. Exactly.
I disagree only in that he put it in the future tense. It's happening right now.
Absolutely. So those utterances have have tremendous political meaning in terms of the allocation of resources. That's to me.
So when you have a Lindsey Graham coming out of his office yesterday and they put a microphone in front of him and say, what do you make of Trump's claim? And he says he has got to stop looking at this and the legitimacy of the election. He won, and he can't keep on doing this to the American people because he's going to lose them very, very quickly if he keeps doing this.
Then so be it. Then it's on him if that happens. Then so be it.
Lips to ear.
Okay.
Okay. And then, hey, come, hey, Bob, you let us too long. Good morning, panel. NPR's Morning Edition has segments.
Oh, that's the one I read. I apologize. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Hi, panel. According to OutsideOnline.com, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimates that the project will potentially impact, that's the wall, 111 endangered species, 108 species of migratory bird, 4 wildlife refugees and fish hatcheries, and an unknown number of protected wetlands. Impacted species would include jaguars, sea turtles, manatees, and bald eagles. And that's from Mary. John
says, they're not Americans.
John says, the wall is a stunt and an offensive one at that. It will not increase security, but it will make Mexico less secure, making drug lords there even more powerful than they already are. Victoria says, Canada and the USA have the longest unbarricaded and unprotected border in the world. As usual, Canada not considered in blanket statements about barricaded borders in Mexico's situation. And that's Vicky in Nova Scotia, of all places.
I drive back and forth to Canada all the time, and I sit at that border for, you know, as long as everybody else, you know, and I don't hold that against Canada.
Those are people, not a wall. You are checked by a person. We don't have officers to patrol.
Yeah, but I could only legally go across in certain designated areas.
One more letter, and then we're going to take a break.
Okay, very quickly. Good morning. I can't keep track of DT's, Donald Trump's executive orders, and what they all mean. Is there someplace in the media which we are so dependent on now? List this information. Please keep us aware. And as for the wall, I think, what else could be done with that money?
Go to Google, type in Trump executive orders. There's a list this morning of the 10 that he's passed in his days in office so far.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan. We want to get to, I just want to get to a couple of things, and then we have a ton of letters, and I want to get to those too. There are a lot of them. Oh, look.
Wow.
And now there's more. Excellent. Okay, so we didn't talk about the pipeline reversal, and I do want to talk about that, about the Keystone Pipeline. President Trump sharply changed the federal government's approach to the environment on Tuesday as he cleared the way for 2 major oil pipelines that had been blocked and set in motion a plan to curb regulations that slow other building projects. And his latest moves to dismantle the legacy of his predecessor, Mr. Trump, resurrected the Keystone XL pipeline that has stirred years of debate and expedited another pipeline in the Dakotas that had become a major flashpoint for Native Americans.
Knew it was coming.
Yeah, not a surprise.
Not a good thing either.
I keep thinking about what the majority of the American people think about each of these things. I agree with you, Rosemary. It's a bad thing. So, this just in. Flash, Joe, this just in.
$400,724.
Wow. So we have less than 100,000 to go. We have how many days?
We have a week and 4 days. Is that correct? But anything that we get, obviously, is less than we have to do on the other end, right?
Without question. Well, yeah.
All right.
Box.
WAMC.org.
Okay. How much do you have to give to get a shirt?
$100.
Or for you, Rich, if you do $100, if you do $100 for the shirt, and the First Amendment shirt, and $100, and or $100 for the First Amendment mug with the First Amendment on it, or if you like, Rich, for you, $150 for both. For the
That's
pair.
Right.
All right, I'll do $150 for both. I'll give them to my daughter.
And you and I say this truthfully. You are always very generous, and we thank you for that.
Very generous.
Pig. Mr. What? Trump said, "I am to a large extent an I am to a large extent an environmentalist. I believe in it, but it's out of control, and we're going to make it a very short process."
This is the guy who denied. This is the guy who denied that there was such a thing as global warming. Remember that?
A hoax.
He's an environmentalist. Okay. Richie
it's
said.
It's so nice for a Republican. You just pull. Oh, I'll give you money. You just pull it out of your pocket.
Yeah,
pull
the check out.
Wow.
No, that's so ungracious.
When you
of
have
you.
Kids, you always have a check in your pocket somebody, either your daughter calls you up or your son needs something for
children
soccer.
Children are why yeah. I have no money in
when
my pocket.
When you're a dad, you always have a check.
Well, that's very sweet of you.
But you guys don't have a pen.
Unfortunately, no, we only have pencils and crayons. So,
but I know. The crayons.
But I know. No, I know that Colleen or somebody will bring a pen in here.
Yeah, that's right.
That.
We'll take it.
Okay.
No,
here,
I think you're going to help
here. Richie yeah. says, if you know that the president tells half-truth lies and spews incorrect information often and is prone to becoming unhinged by the facts that are clearly demonstrable, why do you support him? And that's to you. It's a question for you.
I don't support those aspects of him.
Okay.
But it's on you guys to keep to help keep him in line.
And Mary says, thank you, Rich. Mary, is this
aren't we all in this together? I'm sorry, Alan.
I thought we are.
Okay.
Mary, is this your first letter today?
I need you guys to stay with me. Okay. If you guys are going to be off bouncing around the shiny objects.
Yesterday, the panel discussed looking past Trump's tempest and teapots to what he's really doing, like putting a gag order in the depths of agriculture and the interior and the EPA and building pipelines. Time to start doing that, folks. That's from Mary.
All right.
Okay, and Barry says, if we can only truly multitask effectively, we can't. Therefore, Rich's point is a good one. When we spend our time mocking Agent Orange, get it, for his small lies, we aren't paying as much attention to bigger issues. The size of his inauguration crowd is less important than unlimited fracking and registering of minorities just to start. My God, I agree with Rich. Help! I'm not sure I get that one, Barry. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if he goes out of his way to say that he was robbed in an election of votes, and if he goes out of his way to say that more people were at his, he's a liar. That's my problem.
Okay.
As the president.
A politician who's a liar. I mean, come on.
Since they all do it, it's okay. Tracy says, Alan is right. I like this one. With all due respect to Rich's point, Alan is right. Trump's lying is pathological and serves only one purpose, to coddle his ego. And that's from Tracy. Christian says, good morning, panel. The AP and the Washington Post have announced secure data drop boxes with instructions about how to anonymously send documents to the press. Do you think that this kind of access to journalists is a good way to restore faith in journalism and starve the demand for groups like WikiLeaks?
It's an interesting point. Rosemary?
I don't know. It is an interesting point. I don't have a position on it yet.
Doesn't the press already, doesn't the press have access to
Sources.
I
mean,
yeah.
I think they're basically doing a promo for looking for more sources.
Well, sure they are.
WikiLeaks took advantage of new technology. They were the first to make it possible to dump huge amounts of information secretly, anonymously. So every group, every journalism group that I know of in the world has now made that available. And you're seeing it. The Panama Papers were leaked to a newspaper in Germany. I don't think that they want to starve WikiLeaks. No legitimate newspaper or outlet really appreciates WikiLeaks anymore because of the bad things they've done after getting the information.
Hope says, dear panel, please comment on the media blackout and contract freeze with the EPA.
Okay, well, my view on it at first was horror. And then the truth is that every administration, absolutely, and in fact, every new company, changeover in every new company, does the same thing, which say, look, you know, we're scattered. We don't have our act together. Don't send out any messages. We want to look over them at first. We want to have a coherent single message. That makes sense to me. The problem is that the administration seems to be centering on science-based information, especially climate change. So you have the EPA, Interior, and Agriculture being the main three that are targeted in this group. That's unfortunate, and they say it will only be a few weeks, so we just have to keep on top of that. The other thing is, if indeed it really is a gag order, and it's on all the agencies, that usually, from my journalistic point of view, is counterproductive. Then you have people who feel strongly about these issues, who feel gagged, and they come and talk to the press. You have disgruntled employees who hate that there's a closeness, and they'll come and talk to the press. You're much better to just let people go off and talk.
You know, Rosemary, I have lived through a lot of governors in New York State, and a lot of them come in, and the first thing they do is they say, nobody talks to the press.
Yeah.
And the public information officers, the PIOs, are scared to death, because it means their job if it gets out. Some of them were particularly hard-nosed about it. And that, by the way, goes on both the Democratic and the Republican side.
He has yet to make an order, which is like the traditional first thing you do when you come in as president, about freedom of information requests. So Bush came in and said, do everything you can to thwart these requests. And then Obama came in and said, the presumed position is it's open, give it to the reporters. Trump hasn't done that yet.
All right.
I'm waiting for that. That will be, I'm not hopeful.
Also, EPA was the most prolific agency in terms of regulation, especially like, you know, these midnight regulations, right, over the last, you know, 30 to 60 days. And EPA was also kind of the most activist, arguably, of the agencies in terms of what it was doing on coal mining and things like that, you know, going into almost the legislative context. So you could kind of it wasn't hard to predict that EPA would kind of would bear the brunt of being pulled back in. But you know, I go back to what you said first. Everybody does this, right? I'm sure I know Obama did it. It wasn't a story, but you know, it's a story now.
Jackie says, hi, panel. Thanks for having Rich on this morning. While I don't often agree with him, I enjoy hearing, quote, the other side on the program, and it's refreshing to hear a level-headed conservative. Thank you, Rich. And that's from Jackie. And then Holly says,
level-headed you are.
I read today in Boston Magazine that Elizabeth Warren supported the nomination of Ben Carson. What? Didn't she grill him mercilessly? And that Markey supported Ross and Chow? Oh, boy, this is some way to start a resistance movement. Your thoughts?
They're all going to get through. Marco Rubio grilled Tillerson and then said he's going to vote for him. It's all going to go through.
But isn't that not the place to have the fight, though? Or do you think it is?
It's not a fight. It's a discussion. I wish there were more time. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
Let's vet them completely, get all the stuff out. Yes, I do agree with that.
Yeah, and the question, I was watching whoever they were questioning yesterday or the day before. Besides the fact that they have no time to question and no time to follow up, the questions are so canned. You know, none of these people would pass your interview class, Joe. You don't feel like you're really eliciting any kind of truth.
They're giving speeches.
Very bad system.
Let's see here. Andreas says, hi, panel. Please ask Rich how he feels about Trump's non-divestiture plan and the lawsuits that have been filed against him. Thank you.
I don't know. I don't know anything about the lawsuits. I haven't read them. I hope that his non-divestiture plan turns into at least a partial divestiture plan, or something that people believe is
give it to your kids.
Yeah, right. People believe that you know,
and never talk
to
your kids
compliant
again
with ethics. You know, I said this the first time. He's always going to know that the Trump organization is out there. I mean, that's not a big secret. I think a lot of it is really easy to fix. The stuff about the whole emoluments clause, it would be easy for him to say, you know, I'm not getting any revenue that we derive from foreign governments. And if they wanted to go further and say, we're just not going to do business, the Trump organizations, with foreign governments, that would be nice, too.
How do you run a hotel and do that?
With foreign governments.
So you'd have Dubai coming in, the government of Dubai coming in for a conference in his hotel next door to
And I'm not saying he has to go that far, but that would be a step that would not be unprecedented if people took that. You know, people try and go above and beyond when they're talking about conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has not so far.
He has not. I don't know that he's gone. He certainly has not gone. I don't know that he's gone above. He certainly hasn't gone beyond.
David says they don't want the mortgage insurance cut because the first order of business, according to our new Treasury Secretary, is to privatize Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They're trying to build its cash reserves because they will be taking that with them. David.
Listen, if we want to have an hour and a half really boring show, we could talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and how, you know, what they were supposed to be doing and how they have failed. But I don't think that getting rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or privatizing them or severely limiting their influence would be a bad thing at all. I didn't see them doing a whole heck of a lot during the mortgage crisis to help anything.
Okay, this one's too long. Tony, T-O-N-I, I'm not reading it, too long. Okay. Barbara says, do you worry that as news gets so depressing, people start to withdraw from it to save their sanity? We must all step up every day and call Congress and write letters to DT. The Women's March in D.C. and elsewhere was just a start, and that's from Barbara. Okay. Cindy says, Alan is great. And then she says, now that I have your attention, why can't Trump supporters just see how mentally unstable he is? Over and over, he has ardently made false claim and no evidence exists. A few examples, thousands of Muslims celebrating New Jersey, Obama born in Kenya, the Central Park Five are really guilty when DNA evidence and confession exonerated them, and now his claim of voter fraud when no one has seen evidence of this. He is mentally ill, and evidence of this game is right in front of all our faces. Viva la resistance. You write them, I read them. Dave says
there was a great article, I believe, in the Washington Post yesterday about that. This goes on for throughout his business career, of when he started originally selling the Trump Tower, that he said it's 68 floors, and they said, well, no, it's 58. And he goes, yeah, but 68 sounds better. He'd say, I have the number one show on television. They'd say, well, it's actually 72nd. And he goes, no, it's the number one in its time slot. No, that's actually not. No, it's the number one. And that this is a pattern that's been going on for a very, very long time.
Okay. Dave says, Rich brings balance and civility to the panel.
Yes, you do.
And $150.
Yeah. Oh, I just have to say, Rich wrote his check, and on the memo portion it says four, and Rich said four, making WAMC great again. Oh. So.
That hurts.
And Dave says, Rich brings. Oh, we did that. Rich brings balance and civility to the panel. When he is on, all of you are at your best.
I think Rosemary's always at her best.
Yeah, I think I resent that.
Well, Allison says,
I study harder when Rich comes on.
AP lead in the voter fraud claims really wordsmiths it. Quote, no benign explanation. There is no benign explanation for Donald Trump's false assertion that millions of people voted illegally in the last election. It is either a deliberate attempt to undermine faith in the democratic process and exhortation to those who favor new restrictions on access to the ballot box, or the worrisome trait of someone with immense power willing to make wild statements without any credible evidence.
Now, isn't that more? I like that. There's no benign explanation.
That's pretty good.
That's an elegantly worded sentence, and it's a lot better than, you know, Donald Trump is a big fat liar.
Jeff says nobody should worry about.
He is big and fat. Come on, demonstrable, Rose, demonstrable. His own lawyer, his own crazy lawyer, said he's obese. There it is, evidence proof.
Oh. Yeah, he did say he needs to lose 20 pounds.
Yep.
Jeff says, nobody should worry about calling Trump a liar. He himself called Ted Cruz a liar for months.
Lying Ted.
He's not a journalist, though. He's not held to our high standards.
Yeah, right.
He's only president.
But I think the point of that previous letter, the one two letters ago, is well taken. That, you know,
yeah,
isn't that a much more cutting remark?
I am trying. What could be a benign explanation?
There's no benign explanation.
Oh, I forgot there wasn't any. I just forgot that there was no voter fraud. Or I meant to say not instead of there is, you know. No.
Okay. Randy says, anybody who has lived with a psychopath knows one when we see one. The word is not used pejoratively here. It is a thing. Please consider having a vox pop with a psychiatrist, and he or she will enlighten you about Mr. Trump, and all of what we are speaking about will come into context. Trump's is acting very predictably for a psychopath. Not pejorative, it's simply a reality.
I think I speak for the entire panel when we say, Randy, we're sorry of your experience with a psychopath.
I want to hear about that.
Right, okay. And Mike says, I can understand NPR's being careful about labeling a lie versus factually unproven. If it were just this episode, I can understand the reluctance. The question might be, how much of a role does a pattern of untruths go into labeling a falsehood a lie? Doesn't pattern go to intent? And that's from Mike in Glens Falls. Rich is right, says Mark. He uses these little issues as a distraction. He will compulsively refute any issue with any statements he cares to. The truth is not a concern. Focus on the important issues.
Yeah, I think we all agree that he uses shiny objects. The question is whether this voter fraud stuff is a shiny object or something we truly ought to be concentrating on and writing and talking about.
Sure, because as a letter writer pointed out earlier, and we've been saying all along, this is just a way to get even more
voter suppression laws passed.
Yeah. So it is important. So cut it out.
All right. Pick two good letters, Alan, and one with those.
Okay. Trump's fact-free statements are bait to his non-fact-seeking base. They are not for discriminating minds. And that's from Kevin, who writes frequently. Okay, and then Rosalind says...
He must be a member of that highly educated elite. Yeah.
Rosalind says...
I thought that was nicely said.
Rosalind says... Good morning, panel. Rich is right about chasing the shiny objects. Berlusconi did not get defeated until people started to focus more on the actual policies and actions instead of his antics. And that's from Rosalind.
All right. We are out of time. Thanks for all the letters. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks for the discussion. We appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with more. And we will continue our conversation. Thanks to Alan and Rosemary and Rich. Yeah. Paul, thank you. Thanks for the check, Rich. And we'll continue after this short break.